face with this other message. We all deserve to live in peace and safety and not spend every summer fearing that we'll lose everything. Protecting homes and communities should be our top priority, not creating more profits for the timber industry by spending money on logging instead of on protecting homes.
Right.
And I just want to offer that as a taste. Yeah, very different. And, you know, I personally don't disagree with anything in either of those messages, but I know one is going to land with a lot more people and shift the focus again to what's most important and most compelling to most people of keeping homes and communities safe. That every dollar spent on a logging project somewhere is a dollar that's not being spent putting, you know, new vents on homes and, you know, making them more ignition resistant so they don't catch fire in the first place. Because that's, especially in this age of climate change, that's the thing that we have the most control over.
That is a great place to leave it. I could keep talking to you about this for hours, and I'm sure we will. But for now, Alex Budd, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining me on Coast Range Radio.
Thanks so much, Michael. It's been great.
That's all the time we have for today on Coast Range Radio. We are an independent, volunteer-run show. You can find Coast Range Radio free and ad-free on all podcast apps. You can follow us on Instagram. And the show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. I would love to hear what you think of the show, whether you loved it, hated it, anything, any of the above, whether you got a sourdough recipe, just give us a shout sometime at coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Let's make it through this together.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
I wanna be a cowboy. Tune in to Between the Covers, Thursday, April 16th at 11 a.m. as we interview author Michelle Cox. She is known for her Henrietta and Inspector Howard series and the Meriwether novels. She also writes a weekly blog, Novel Notes of Local Lore, chronicling the lives of Chicago's forgotten residents. New York Times bestselling author Kate Quinn has said this about her: Michelle writes flawed, fascinating women with understanding, compassion, and grace. So tune into Between the Covers as we discuss her latest novel, The Fallen Woman. That's Thursday, April 16th at 11 a.m.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Camp Bluegrass Pride, an LGBTQ+ bluegrass music group featuring hands-on workshops, one-on-one instruction, collaborative jams, and nightly concerts from June 21st through June 26th in Astoria, Oregon. All identities and skill levels welcome. More info at bluegrasspride.net.
He fed everything, and then he just sat down quietly and read.
Rank asked me to give up the diary for a while. He felt that it was preventing me from writing novels.
This is Stephen Rains, poet and board president of the Anais Nin Foundation.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. India's anti-trans proposal sparks protests. New South Wales acts to stop dating app ambushes. Tennessee Williams remembers Marlon Brando. Anais Nin's Diaries of Self-Discovery revisited. Those stories and more now that you found This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
With News Wrap. A summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 21st, 2026.
Transgender people in India are protesting a proposed amendment to the Transgender Persons Protection of Rights. The amendment introduced to India's parliament on March 13th removes the recognition of self-identified gender. It narrows the definition of transgender, including people without medical diagnoses and those outside four traditionally defined sociocultural identities. trans men, and non-binary people are effectively erased. Currently, citizens can apply for a certificate to legally identify as trans, allowing them to update their gender on official documents and apply for government welfare programs. If the amendment passes, a screening committee would be put in place to review applications. Queer activists worry this could introduce a biomedical surveillance and be used to deny gender-affirming care. They say the right to self-declare gender is already protected by a landmark 2014 Supreme Court ruling, which declared transgender people as a third official gender and affirmed their fundamental rights would be protected under India's constitution. The All India Feminist Alliance and the National Alliance for Justice, Accountability, and Rights issued an appeal to withdraw the amendment, saying the bill does not represent our collective will as citizens of this country and threatens the hard-won feminist social justice fight and rights for equal citizenship.
Legislators in New South Wales want to make it easier to prosecute hate crimes against the queer community in the Australian state. Proposed amendments to the Hate Crimes Act will include a new offense to target offenders who lure victims on false pretenses, particularly those who use dating apps to hunt their prey. It will also increase punishments for serious assaults and robberies. Dating app ambushes have been on the rise in New South Wales, as Equality Australia's legal director Heather Corkhill told SBS News.
They're part of a broader pattern of dozens of app-based attacks across the country, driven by extremist ideologies, not just ISIS-inspired, but even more commonly, far-right extremist rhetoric.
Legislative Council leader Lesbian Penny Sharp said,
2026 is no place for any gay or bisexual or transgender person to be set upon in this way, to have their abuse sent out on social media for the world to see, for them to be humiliated and for them to be publicly threatened simply for being who they are. That's not who New South Wales is, and that's why I'm really pleased that we're taking these changes today.
A coalition of more than 100 sports and human rights advocacy groups is calling for the Olympics to stop its alleged plans to resume so-called sex testing. The groups warned that genetic sex testing may be recommended for the 2028 Games, and that could prohibit intersex and trans athletes from competing. This comes 1 month after the International Olympic Committee revealed plans to release new eligibility requirements for transgender athletes. The IOC phased out chromosomal and hormone testing back in 1996, as experts and doctors advised the tests were potentially inaccurate. IOC President Kirsty Coventry switched gears during a press conference last December, saying her initiative was well underway to, in her words, protect women's sport.
We're going to find ways of trying to find a consensus that has all aspects covered, and maybe not going to be the easiest thing to do, but we are going to try our best to ensure that when we are talking about the female category, we are protecting the female category, and we're doing that.
Olympic athletes have long faced criticism and scrutiny around gender. Algerian boxer Iman Khalif made headlines when she was misidentified as transgender after winning gold at the 2024 Paris Games. Earlier this year, Khalif told CNN she would comply with gender testing to compete in world boxing events. Sport and Rights Alliance Executive Director Andrea Florence said in the coalition's joint statement, "Gender policing and exclusion harms all women and girls and undermines the very dignity and fairness the IOC claims to uphold." The IOC said in a statement to Reuters that no decisions have been made.
The Trump administration has released new visa requirements that could exclude transgender applicants. Applicants are randomly selected to receive U.S. visas through the Diversity Immigrant Visa Program, also known as the Green Card Lottery. The changes, set to take effect April 10th, would require applicants' passports to match the administration's definition of biological sex. two immutable genders, male and female. That new rule could allow the Department of Homeland Security's Immigration and Customs Enforcement Division to target and scrutinize applicants based on what the administration describes as gender fraud. Dozens of countries, such as Canada, Australia, and Denmark, offer gender-neutral X passport markers. Under the previous Biden administration, the United States was one of them. The Trump administration says U.S. citizens with gender-neutral passports can keep them until they expire, but they won't be able to renew them. Equality Australia is cautioning trans and gender-diverse Australians about going to the U.S. According to the group, there have been reports of travelers from other countries being refused entry or detained on arrival, with the most serious cases resulting in long-term or permanent bans.
In San Diego, California, four families are suing a children's hospital for ending gender-affirming care. The plaintiffs say Rady Children's Health is discriminating against transgender patients and violating multiple state laws. This comes after the Trump administration threatened to cut government funding for hospitals that provide transgender health care to minors.
On the opposite U.S. coast, New York Attorney General Letitia James is facing backlash for ordering NYU Langone to continue providing gender-affirming care to trans youth. U.S. Department of Justice Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche warned the department would take all necessary actions to defend the hospital's decision in a letter obtained by Fox News. That would pave the way for a legal fight that could reach the nation's highest courts. New York is not alone in its fight against the Federal Declaration on Pediatric Sex-Rejecting Procedures. A coalition of over 20 states has sued the Department of Health and Human Services over the declaration restricting gender-affirming care.
A judge in Portland, Oregon, said the government overreached with its health care declaration. Judge Mustafa Kasabhai ruled on March 19th that HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. did not follow proper administrative procedure when issuing the declaration last December. Kasabhai also denied the government's motion to dismiss the case. New York Attorney General James responded in a press release saying, "Today's win breaks through the noise and gives some needed clarity to patients, families, and providers. Healthcare services for transgender young people remain legal, and the federal government cannot intimidate or punish the providers who offer them." Poland's top court has ruled that civil registries must recognize same-sex marriages performed in other European Union countries. The couple at the center of the case got married in Berlin in 2018. When they returned to Poland, they asked their local registry in Warsaw to translate and register their marriage certificate. They were denied. Last November, the EU Court of Justice ruled that member states cannot refuse to recognize marriages legally performed within the bloc. The Polish Administrative Court honored that decision and followed suit on March 20th. Poland remains one of the few countries in Europe without a domestic law that recognizes same-sex unions. This landmark ruling paves the way for thousands of queer Polish couples to pursue legal recognition.
The Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida, was demolished on March 18th. The venue was a pillar in the city's gay community until a mass shooting in 2016. This June will mark the 10th anniversary of the deadly massacre, where 49 people were killed, making it the second most lethal mass shooting in U.S. history. The city of Orlando plans to build a permanent memorial at the site to commemorate the victims. Who you gonna hate now, when there's no one left but you? Who are you gonna gun down, if you can't kill the truth? That it's inside of us, it's inside our blood, it's inside of us.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending March 14th, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
Muse Rap was written by Ebony Joseph and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm John Dyer V. Stay safe.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is the Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Brian DeShazer.
This week, we honor the March birthdays of Alexandra Billings and Tennessee Williams.
Perhaps best known for her role as Davina on the Amazon Emmy and Golden Globe winning hit Transparent, actress, singer, author, and USC assistant professor of acting, Alexandra Billings has performed across the United States in hundreds of plays and musicals, including being the first transgender actress to portray Gypsy's Mama Rose.
Openly gay playwright Tennessee Williams' first major success was 1944's The Glass Menagerie, which was based on his own family. He won the Pulitzer Prize for drama for A Streetcar Named Desire in 1948, and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof in 1955. Here, from a 1976 press conference, Tennessee recalls his first meeting with Marlon Brando, courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Mr. Williams, in your memoirs, you describe your meeting with Mr. Brando. I wonder if you could recollect that for us.
Oh, I described him exactly as it was. If you read the memoirs, that's exactly how it took place. He was sent up by Edith Kazan and found him, I hadn't heard of him even, and he was sent up to, spending some time on the Cape, and he sent him up there, and he arrived several days after I was expecting him. And I had given up on him ever appearing, but he did finally arrive with this very pretty young chick, and we were living in desperate circumstances. Texas producer-director Margot Jones was there, and a colleague of hers, Joanna Albus, and all our lights had gone out, and the plumbing had broken down. And I that's all described memoirs, but he fed everything, and then he just sat down quietly and read. And after a few moments, Margot let out this hoop of delight and got on the phone and said, "This man is the greatest actor I've ever heard, even in Texas."
Now let's rewind to a few March key queer milestones. In March 1982, Wisconsin became the first U.S. state to outlaw discrimination based on sexual orientation. In 1987, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, better known as ACT UP, was formed in New York to fight for better AIDS policies.
In 1975, an Ontario Human Rights Code Review Committee in Canada was established to consider gay and lesbian protections. March is also recognized as Bisexual Health Awareness Month, and on March 31st, International Transgender Day of Visibility is recognized, a reminder that our history is built on courage, creativity, and community.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lunn. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you. Je me souviens de tes poèmes et de la lumière dans tes yeux. Je me souviens
This is Stephen Rains, poet and board president of the Anais Nin Foundation. Anais Nin started her diary at the age of 7, initially as a way of reporting to her estranged father about her new life in the U.S. Soon she started writing the diary for herself, and kept this practice until her passing at the age of 73 in 1977. Her diary chronicles her growth as a woman and as an artist. She rebelled against societal expectations and lived a life that resonated for her. I think that these themes of becoming, defiance, and creative expression is interesting for queer readers. After her death, her unexpurgated diaries were published and revealed many close friendships with gay men and Nin herself having relations with women. This Way Out presents Anais Nin reading from her diaries on October 4th, 1966.
And what I have to say is really distinct from the artist and art. It is the woman who has to speak. And it is not only the woman, Anais, who has to speak, but I who have to speak for many women. As I discover myself, I feel I am merely one of many, a symbol. I begin to understand June, Jeanne, and many others, George Sand, Georgette Leblanc, Eleonora Duse, women of yesterday and women of today. The mute ones of the past, the inarticulate who took refuge behind wordless intuitions, and the women of today, all action and copies of men. And I in between, here lies the personal overflow, the personal and feminine overfullness, feelings that are not for books, not for fiction, not for art. All that I want to enjoy, not transform. My life has been one long series of efforts, self-discipline, will. Here I can sketch, improvise, be free, and myself.
Psychoanalysis was important to Nin. In this recording, she mentions Otto Rank, one of her therapists, who initially suggested she forego writing in the diary.
Rank asked me to give up the diary for a while. He felt that it was preventing me from writing novels. The period without the diary remains an ordeal. Every evening, I wanted the diary as one wants opium. I wanted nothing else but the diary to rest upon, to confide in, but I also wanted to write a novel. I went to my typewriter and I worked on House of Incest and Winter of Artifice. A deep struggle. A month later, I began the portrait of Rank in a diary volume, and Rank did not feel it was the diary I had resuscitated, but a notebook, perhaps. The difference is subtle and difficult to seize, but I sense it. The difference may be that I poured everything into the diary. It channeled away from invention and creation and fiction. Rank also wanted me to be free of it, to write when I felt like it, but not compulsively. Get out into the world, Rank said. Leave your house at Louvciennes. That is isolation, too. Leave the diary. That is withdrawing from the world. And so now I am out. Out. I'm always out. With everybody. Last night I did get sad in the beautiful Scheherazade nightclub with her own people. I pinched myself. Allons donc, streets. You're on the street at last. Walking along the crowded streets of Henry's crowded books. External and internal to be balanced, nurturing each other, or else the internal eats me like rust. Introspection almost devoured me, and Henry saved me. He took me down into the street. It is enough that a few hours ago I was obliged to think about my father in order to write about him. It is enough. Come, Square Montelon. Boulevard Jean Jaurès, Rue Saint-Martin, like Mary Dyke dancing in my empty head. It is I who taught Henry that streets in themselves were of no interest. He accumulated descriptions, but I felt they needed to be the decor for some drama, some emotion. It is I who awakened the man who walked through the streets. No more anonymous maps, but maps of both form and content, matter and significance. Streets and the men who walk through them. Restless, looking again for intensity, fever, turmoil, everything seems to move too slowly, slowly, and yet my life is full. I'm translating volume 1 of the diary. I wrote about the incident of looking for Russian-style pajamas for my father. I wrote for House of Incest, the visit to the painting of Lot and his daughter at the Louvre with Artaud. Whenever I feel sadness about my father, I write. When I yearn for him, I write. When I feel regrets, I write. Bloom. There's a bloom on everything and on everybody. Happiness. The soft bloom of happiness. Soft breezes. Talk like a summer breeze. Love like ripe flower. New dresses like new grass. The round curves and smells of summer. Idyllic. Inside the happiness, the worm of imagination, craving, expecting, searching. Has pain made too deep a scar so that I do not feel the gentle touch of happiness? The flesh too scarred, too coarse-grained to feel the softness of the summer? Only another wound can make it tremble. I am not made for happiness. It is like sleep. So now I'm divided into three selves. One self lives at Louveciennes, has a Spanish maid, eats breakfast in bed, eats pheasants killed by Lanny and Louis Andard, listens to the radio, gives orders to the gardener, pays her bills with checks, sits by an open fire, copies the diaries and translates the second diary volume from French into English, dreams by the window, gets restless for heightened living. In Villa Sera, with Henry and Fred and a constant stream of people walking in and out, I peel potatoes, grind coffee, French style, wrap books, drink out of chipped cups and glasses discarded in Louveciennes, wipe my hands with old towels left over from Louveciennes, walk down the cobblestone street to market, repair the phonograph, because Henry is absolutely helpless in practical matters, take the bus, sit at a café, talk a great deal about books and films, writing and writers, smoke a great deal and watch the invasion of people walking in and out of the place. Henry has made friends with all the neighbors. The third self wants to learn a profession so that she may always write as she believes, wants to help Rank make a new life because he helped her make a new life, and wants the unknown, the unfamiliar. I finally promised to go to New York for 2 months. I feel 2 months are short in the span of eternity. But psychoanalysis did save me, because it allowed the birth of the real me, a painful one for a woman, filled with dangers, for no one has ever loved an adventurous woman as they have loved adventurous men. The birth of the real me might have ended like that of my unborn child. I may not become a saint, but I'm very full and very rich. I cannot install myself anywhere yet. I must climb dizzier heights. But I still love the relative, not the absolute. The cabbage and the warmth of a fire. Back on the phonograph and laughter and talk in the cafes and a trunk packed for departure with copies of Tropic of Cancer. And Rank's last SOS, and the telephone ringing all day. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
That was Anaïs Nin reading from the first volume of her diaries in 1966. In 1974, at the height of the women's liberation movement, she spoke about writing in the program entitled The New Woman.
Why one writes is a question I can answer easily, having so often asked it of myself. I believe one writes because one has to create a world in which one can live. I could not live in any of the worlds offered to me. The world of my parents, the world of war, the world of politics. I had to create a world of my own, like a climate, a country, an atmosphere in which I could breathe, reign, and recreate myself when destroyed by living. That, I believe, is the reason for every work of art. The artist is the only one who knows the world is a subjective creation, that there is a choice to be made, a selection of elements. It is a materialization, an incarnation of his inner world. Then he hopes to attract others into it. He hopes to impose this particular vision and share it with others. And when the second stage is not reached, the brave artist continues nevertheless. The few moments of communion with the world are worth the pain, for it is a world for others, an inheritance for others, a gift to others in the end. We also write to heighten our own awareness of life. We write to lure and enchant and console others. We write to serenade our lovers. We write to taste life twice, in the moment and in retrospection.
I'm Stephen Rains for This Way Out.
Thanks to Stephen Rains, author of Outliving Michael, published by Moontide Press. Visit StephenRains.com. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Ebony Joseph is news editor. NewsWrap reporters were Bellamy Keller and John Dyer V. Brian DeShazer is news producer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lund and produced by and co-hosted with Brian DeShazer. Stephen Rains and Brian DeShazer produced the Anais Nin feature. All archival material courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives. Melissa Etheridge and Palm performed some of the music you heard, and Cam Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yavanna Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and in memory of Greg Gordon for his decades of service to the LGBTQ community, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078. For news editor Ebony Joseph, associate producer Lucian Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on KGAY, Palm Springs, California, WERU-FM East Orland, Maine, CFMH St. John, New Brunswick, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kbu.fm.
Earth Day is around the corner. Celebrate with KBOO at our Earth Day tree planting open house, April 22nd, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mingle with other Earth-conscious radio heads, enjoy snacks and drinks, and become a part of KBOO's roots. That's April 22nd, 11 a.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, for KBOO's Earth Day tree planting open house.
I think a lot of trans girls I know feel like butterflies because we've come out as this new beautiful thing. But in the same way, like, you have to kind of break down first before you can like emerge as this new beautiful thing. So there was a lot of difficult moments along the way.
Danny Hoshino writes and performs music as Lightbird.
You had a good day, girl. So why are you crying on the train home from Manhattan?
This is a story called Among the Blobs. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. India's parliament strips trans people of rights, the Maddow Nose and Don't Hide Pierce in the Rainbow Rewind, and Hoshino transitions gender and music to Lightbird. Those stories and more now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Nico Raquel.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 28th,
2026. India's parliament is stripping transgender people of the hard-earned fundamental rights established by a 2014 Supreme Court ruling. The new law completely upends how trans people are legally recognized. It narrows the definition of transgender, excluding people without official gender dysphoria diagnoses and those outside the four traditionally defined sociocultural identities. Trans men and non-binary people are effectively erased. Currently, citizens can apply for a certificate to legally identify as trans, allowing them to update their gender on official documents and apply for government welfare programs. With this amendment, their applications will be reviewed by a screening committee. Queer activists warn that this could be used to deny gender-affirming care.
This bill essentially rolls back legislation that declared transgender people as a third official gender and affirmed their fundamental rights would be protected under India's constitution. Associate Director of the Asia Division of Human Rights Watch, Jayshree Bajoria, believes the bill will put transgender people at risk and criminalize their existence by introducing legal punishments for coercing or alluring people to be transgender. Trans woman and activist Ukai Budmashali expressed her sorrow on Instagram.
I'm so disappointed. I resist, I fight against, I will not accept this. This bill, this is against my people, this is against my community, this is against our beliefs, this is against our identity.
Transgender and intersex athletes are now officially banned from competing in women's events by the International Olympic Committee. All women athletes will be required to take a genetic test to prove they are biologically female. Last week, public outcry from a coalition of more than 100 sports and human rights advocacy groups called for the Olympics to stop its plans to resume so-called sex testing. The IOC banned those tests 30 years ago on the advice of experts and doctors who said that genetic sex tests were inaccurate, unreliable, and harmful to women. However, IOC President Kirsty Coventry claimed the opposite in a video introducing the policy on March 26th.
The policy that we have announced is based on science, and it has been led by medical experts with the best interests of athletes at its heart. At the Olympic Games, even the smallest margins can be the difference between victory and defeat. So it's absolutely clear that it would not be fair for biological males to compete in the female category.
In the nearly 3,000 years the Olympics have existed, only one openly trans woman has competed. New Zealand weightlifter Laurel Hubbard competed in the 2020 Summer Games. She placed seventh in her division.
Coventry said that athletes would only be required to undergo the invasive test once in their lifetime, and that the organization would offer counseling for those who request it. Chris Mojur is a competitive triathlete and duathlete who made history as the first transgender man to compete in the 2020 Olympic trials. He was on the front lines of advocating for a 2016 rule change that allowed trans athletes to compete in the games. He says the policy makes sports less safe for everyone.
So it's absolutely outrageous that the IOC would institute a ban on trans athletes under the guise of protecting fairness for women in sports, while simultaneously putting all women in harm's way by forcing them to do this genetic testing. Sports has already tried this before. The IOC has already tried this before, and it failed scientifically, and it failed ethically. If we really cared about fairness in women's sports, we wouldn't police people's bodies. We would build better sporting systems.
The international queer advocacy group ILGA says the policy fails women and girls. Their statement says, in part, any policy that invites scrutiny over certain women's bodies harms all women. And the harm extends beyond sports, legitimizing surveillance in schools, hospitals, workplaces, and every other sphere of life. IOC President Coventry said the policy will take effect for the 2028 Games in Los Angeles. U.S. President Donald Trump gave the credit to his so-called Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports executive order that penalizes organizations that don't follow his anti-trans position.
While the IOC and President Trump attempt to keep trans women out of competitive sports, the United Nations blocked a vote to define gender in biological terms. Earlier this month, at the annual UN Commission on the Status of Women, the U.S. was the only country to disagree. 37 countries voted against limiting gender to a binary, and 6 abstained. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said gender equality has always been a question of power.
Not a single step forward for women's rights has ever been given. It has been won.
Dominik Krause will become Munich, Germany's first openly gay mayor. He's also the city's first Green Party executive.
Vielen Dank, München, für dieses große Vertrauen. Ich fühle mich sehr geehrt. Vielen, vielen Dank. Und ich kann euch versprechen, und ich kann den Münchner...
The 35-year-old Krause has served on the Munich City Council for 12 years. He won 56.4% of the vote against the former Social Democratic Party mayor, Dietrich Reiter. Krause's victory ends 42 years of SPD rule in the city. Nepal is often recognized as one of the most LGBTQ-positive Asian countries, and voters proved it again on March 16th when they elected a transgender lawmaker to parliament for the first time. 37-year-old activist Bhumika Shrestha is a trans woman and the second openly queer elected official in the country's history.
Girl Guiding in the UK is forcing all trans members to leave the organization. Girl Guides are known as Girl Scouts in the US. It's the world's largest volunteer organization for young women. According to their website, there are nearly 400,000 members across the United Kingdom. Transgender members have until September 6th to withdraw. Trans volunteers will be allowed to stay, but only in roles that are open to all genders. The organization said the decision was made to comply with a 2025 Supreme Court ruling that declared that trans women are not women. Girl Guiding groups across the UK are protesting the policy. Guiders Against Trans Inclusion, an unaffiliated organization, released a PSA to reassure expelled girl guides.
We know you may be feeling angry, scared, and betrayed, and we are right there with you. This is going to have a devastating impact, and we are incredibly concerned that Girl Guiding are putting people's welfare at risk like this. We are going to keep fighting with you and fighting for you for as long as it takes. We will not back down until all girls and women are allowed back into Girl Guiding.
Space, the final frontier.
Finally, School is out at Starfleet Academy. CBS Studios and Paramount Plus pulled the plug on the latest addition to the Star Trek universe after two seasons. Critics of the Starfleet Academy accuse it of being too woke, but the franchise has never shied away from sensitive social issues. Television's first interracial kiss between William Captain Kirk Shatner and Black communications officer Nichelle Uhura Nichols during the third season of the original series caused pandemonium. There have been several LGBTQIA+ characters, and Starfleet Academy features the first gay Klingon. Black British lesbian actress Gina Yashiri, who plays lesbian cadet Master Laura Thok, said in an Instagram post that she's gutted by the cancellation, but retains her belief in the franchise.
The message of Gene Roddenberry is still so apt. Obviously, the world is still not ready to hear the message of love, peace, infinite diversity, acceptance, the eschewing of violence and senseless wars. We're not ready to hear that message yet. And hopefully one day we will be, and Star Trek will be back stronger than ever, and preferably with the same message and not completely whitewashed.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending March 28th, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Ebony Joseph and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Nico Raquel. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
Come on, Harry, we want to say goodnight to you.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
You're You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. Now it's time to rewind the rainbow. This is the Rainbow Rewind,
where we take a quick look back at the people and the moments that made queer history.
I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
This week, we honor the April birthdays of Rachel Maddow, David Hyde Pierce, and Samuel R. Chip Delaney.
Rachel Maddow is the first openly lesbian anchor to host a primetime news program in the United States. She has received multiple Emmy Awards for her broadcasting work and a Grammy Award for the audiobook version of her book Blowout. Maddow can be heard on her podcast and watched weekly on MS Now.
David Hyde Pierce is an American actor best known for his portrayal of psychiatrist Niles Crane on the NBC sitcom Frasier, for which he received 4 Emmy Awards, as well as 2 Screen Actor Guild Awards and 5 Golden Globe Award nominations. He won the Tony Award for Best Actor in a Musical for his role in the Broadway musical Curtains.
Samuel R. Chip Delaney is an award-winning American science fiction writer, memoirist, and critic, known for groundbreaking works like Dahlgren and Babel 17. Openly gay and African American, Delaney has long explored themes of sexuality, identity, and society in his writing. A pioneer in bringing queer perspectives into speculative fiction, his work helped expand the boundaries of LGBTQ representation in literature. Here is Chip reading from his 1988 short story, Among the Blobs.
This is a story called Among the Blobs. Oh, I'm terribly sorry, ma'am. I'm sorry. He swayed, one arm raised, torso stalled in the torque of its own turning. His name was Joe. To one side of his back was not a pain, nor even a feel, but rather a sensational ghost, an unformed blob.
Now let's rewind a few March key queer milestones. In April of 1974, the American Psychiatric Association removes sickness from its definition of homosexuality. In 2001, the Chinese Psychiatric Association removes homosexuality from the list of mental disorders.
In 1990, the Hate Crime Statistic Act was signed into law by President George Bush. It's the first United States bill to use the phrase sexual orientation. The first Dyke March was held in Washington, D.C. in 1993. The march was planned by the Lesbian Avengers, and more than 20,000 women participated.
That's this week's Rainbow Rewind, because remembering our past fuels our pride. I'm Brian DeShazer.
And I'm Sherry Lund. Stay tuned. More This Way Out is coming up.
Transgender Day of Visibility has a special meaning for the artist now known on stage as Lightbird. This March 31st, as trans people around the world are vying to be seen, Lightbird wants to be heard with the release of her new single. For the story behind the song, here's This Way Out's David Hunt.
Danny Hoshino writes and performs music as Lightbird. It's a new name for the veteran folk rock guitarist, marking a new and deeply personal chapter in Hoshino's life. A life that seemed to unravel 3 years ago, when Hoshino came out as a transgender woman.
You had a good day, girl, so why are you crying on the train home from Manhattan?
Today, her life is transformed. She's starting fresh in a new city, New York, working on new songs for a new album, and living, finally, she says, the life she was always meant to live. I'm David Hunt. I sat down with Danny Hoshino, Lightbird, just 2 weeks before the release of her newest single, a bittersweet ballad titled All Right. It's a duet with Brooklyn singer Rye Lotz that explores the broken promises and broken hearts of a romantic relationship at its end. The music crashes as Lightbird takes a deep dive into her conflicting emotions.
You don't need a reason to
The song, released on Transgender Day of Visibility, is true to life. In 2022, just 5 weeks before her wedding day, the singer realized that the life of a cisgender heterosexual man was, to say the least, not all right. She explains.
I think a lot of trans girls I know feel like we feel like butterflies because we've come out as this new beautiful thing. But in the same way, like you have to kind of break down first before you can like emerge as this new beautiful thing. So there was a lot of difficult moments along the way. I grew up in a suburb of Boston, Newton, Massachusetts. My mom's from that area. My dad grew up in San Francisco. His side of the family is Japanese American. My mom's side of the family is like Eastern European Jewish. We're a close family, and I had really kind of assumed that I would always stay in the Boston area and was very much on the path at the time that I did realize I was trans. I was living up in another suburb of Boston, had a 9-to-5 job, and was getting ready to get married. And then this like lightning strike happened where I suddenly realized like some of the things that I had been trying to understand about myself were like this, you know, this very deep thing about gender that I had just never considered until I was in my 30s. Weddings, especially heterosexual, you know, traditional weddings, are very gendered. Like there's so many things about them that are like very specific to the gender roles in terms of what you're going to wear and what you're going to say and what, you know, how you're appearing in the wedding. And I think that was becoming increasingly difficult for me to like visualize myself there. My mom kept poking me and saying, you know, have you found a suit to wear for the wedding yet? And I would say like, you know, like, no, I just haven't like, you haven't gotten that. But really what was happening was I was sitting at my computer and Googling men's wedding dress over and over. Cause like, I couldn't be okay with the idea of wearing a suit for some reason. And I was like, there must be something else I could wear that would make me feel, I don't know, right somehow. I think the most important thing for me was deciding early on, like, I need to have, like, this is an era of my life where I need to be having my own back first before anyone else's, because I won't make it through it if I don't. And I think the songs sing to that and to the sometimes like sad realizations of what that comes along with. I think specific to All Right, that song to me is, you know, I wrote it about the end of my relationship after realizing I was trans. And it was a really, really good relationship. It was somebody I was, you know, getting ready to marry and someone that I love very much. And, you know, sometimes life throws you a curveball and something big changes and good, great things happen as a result, but hard, sad things happen as a result too. And I think that's that song in particular sort of examines the tension between those two things that like, sometimes you can't have one without the other.
Well, I'm sad and I'm lonely, and I feel that I only smile to get through the day. But I'm telling you, my baby, three cups and maybe I feel differently today. Oh.
It's probably cliche to say Lightbird is rising like a phoenix out of the ashes of her past life and loves. So let's just say her transition has touched nearly every aspect of herself, leading her in new directions creatively as much as geographically. The new album, likely due out in June 2026, is a case in point.
Yeah, so it's my first full-length album with this project, Lightbird. It's a collection of songs that most of which I wrote following my realization that I was trans and coming out as transgender, but some from before that time too. So I think the story of the album sort of like spans the time before, slightly before and after. So it's just kind of different parts of that journey to self-discovery and self-love and understanding.
Tell me about the name Lightbird. Where did that come from?
I have a song, it's one of the couple singles that I already have out that I had written years and years ago called Bird in the Dark. And as I was thinking about names, I think I was thinking about that song and sort of the imagery of like, I don't know, thinking of myself sort of like as previously sort of like a dark bird who was sort of like a little more reserved and meek and pulled back and not necessarily wanting to be in the spotlight, and now kind of entering into this period where I very much wanted to be in the spotlight and wanted to like celebrate myself and put myself out there. So kind of a bird stepping into the light.
It's hidden on the wind, it's skimming on the water, it's feeling the gift from the two little daughters squinting at the sun.
I've been a songwriter for a long time, and I've always, you know, drawn from that personal well for, you know, what I wanted to write about. But I do think that prior to all this, I just didn't really feel like I had a real perspective or a real like voice that I felt strongly about. And I think now being like, okay, I've really got something to sing about, has pushed me to make it that much more like honest and raw and exposed.
Are you surprised at your life?
Yeah, I'm super surprised at my life. A lot of times, a lot of days I kind of like look around at the people around me and like what my day-to-day is and just like still can't believe it. Most of all, when I look at myself in the mirror or in the little video here, it's like, I think even 3 years into transition, and most of the time I have this, you know, you have your kind of like inner vision of how you are sort of manifesting physically out in the world. Even still, it's easy for that to kind of slip back and for me to feel more like I used to feel. So the mirror has been a huge, is always a huge tool for me to like actually see myself and be like, wow, yeah, I remember one of the things my mom said to me in an early conversation after I came out, I was like, we were just so surprised because, you know, we just didn't expect this. And I was like, I didn't expect this. I'm equally surprised, like did not see this coming, but I'm so glad it came.
What's next?
I'm still a very small artist, so music being my livelihood is, you know, not, I'm not there. So there's a lot of other distractions and things that I need to work on to just, you know, continue to exist, especially in a city like New York. But I really want to push myself to like focus my collective life energy on creating stuff and putting it out there and just kind of like, so it feels like shouting into the void sometime, but even if it is, I'm just going to keep shouting because I feel like the worst thing that we could do right now is get quieter. So keep singing out.
Weeks from my wedding day, lying with my little bae, but I am taking flight at 30.
I'd like to thank Lightbird for sharing her music and her experiences for this program. Learn more about her music at lightbirdmusic.com. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Ebony Joseph is our news editor. NewsWrap reporters were Michael LeBeau and Nicole Raquel. Brian DeShazer is news producer. The Rainbow Rewind was written by Sherry Lunn and produced by and co-hosted with Brian DeShazer. David Hunt produced our feature. Archive material courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives. Harry Styles and Lifebird performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and in memory of Greg Gordon for his decades of service to the LGBTQ community, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KPFT Houston, Texas, WRIR Richmond, Virginia, CHSR Fredericton, New Brunswick, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hi.
Hello?
Is this Joey Ramone?
Yes, it is.
Why do you still sound the same after all these years?
Because it's me.
No, but I mean the band.
Because we're great.
Because you're great. Hey!